ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to our incentive seminar. We have a new incentive scheme that is being introduced. It's called Carrot, No Stick.
Ooh, say more.
Right, well, there are two layers to this cutting-edge approach. For hitting your sales target this quarter, you get a company-branded stress ball.
What? Really?
An incentive layer B. If you exceed your sales target this quarter, we'll fill your car up with petrol for a whole calendar month. Your well-being in this cost-of-living crisis is our paramount concern.
I'll show you what I'd do with a petrol voucher. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong. Welcome to This Working Life on ABC Radio National, helping to make your work life better. You may have heard in the news recently that Australia's richest person and longtime supporter of Australian swimming, Gina Rinehart, has been offering cash bonuses for Aussie swimmers at the Commonwealth Games, $20,000 for a gold medal. This got us thinking about incentives at work. Do they actually work? And how do they work? Dr. Stacey Parker is an organisational psychologist and associate professor in psychology at the University of Queensland. Now, she's working from home today and she promises us some workplace soundtrack with chickens, a dog and some birds. Hello, Stacey.
Hi, Lisa.
Mark Puncher is the CEO of Employer Branding Australia. He's in the studio, so no dogs. Hello, Mark.
How are you going?
All right, so let's talk about workplaces generally. What impact can a cash bonus have, Mark?
Look, we all know money matters, especially when times are tough. And so they can be a really great way to attract great talent. They can be a great way to some degree in keeping great talent. The one thing I'd say that's very, very important is keeping someone, attracting someone is not the same as driving consistent, sustained performance from somebody. There's a huge amount of positive to be had, especially when you have transparent financial incentives that people that are achievable for people and that you are supporting them to achieve. There are some big risks in there. And the key thing I'd say is if that is the main reason that people are inspired to stay with you, then you've got problems ahead.
Stacey, what do we see in the research about how people react to cash bonuses?
Well, it's exactly what Mark's describing there. We describe it as a high-risk strategy because it takes a lot to get it right. There's definitely risks and sort of hidden costs. And as Mark says, if it's just activating extrinsic motivation, so driving people to get the cash bonus for the sake of the cash bonus, it could potentially crowd out or undermine their intrinsic motivation for their work. And that's problematic because intrinsic motivation for work is linked to some of the really great higher quality forms of performance like creativity, innovation, the quality of one's performance, citizenship, helping out other teammates. So when we tie cash bonuses to certain aspects of performance, usually it's things we can measure, like the number of widgets produced or a gold medal. And then people might only focus on doing the behaviours that get those outcomes and not the other important performance behaviours we'd like to see from them at work.
And so are there any other risks or hidden costs that you think we should know about here?
Yes, sometimes depending on how people view the scheme, it may make them feel more stressed and affect their well-being. In fact, there was a really large-scale study somewhere in Europe, I'd have to look it up for you and your listeners later, that tracked organisations that actually introduced pay-for-performance schemes. And there they saw a rise in the use of anxiety and depression medication, especially amongst women and older workers. So there's some groups that might also be more at risk.
Mark, Stacey has said high risk approach for cash bonuses. What are you seeing?
Look, I think it's, as always, it depends. It depends on the organisation. It depends on the goals. It depends on the context. What I want to be really clear about is there is a danger in the current societal narrative that we make employers the bad guys, the bad folks, and this and leaders the bad folks. So it's all about how do we support people? How do we empower them? How do we ensure well-being and safety? Absolutely, we need to do those things. The thing we've got to remember is that just as many people are doing battle with life right now, with cost of living and inflation or shrinkflation, whatever you want to talk about, many organizations, many employers are also fighting really hard to survive and to kick on. And the critical piece right now is we need employers and employees to connect and to lean in and to adapt and to strive together in order to succeed. And the key point I make, and I love that idea, Stacey, about high risk, because for me, there is plenty of plus side to individual or team incentives, but there's so much risk in that. And the critical thing for me is what we need is for organizations, for leaders to sit down and say, what are the things we need to achieve? What are the numbers? Let's start with the dollar figures. Let's not pretend otherwise. For many organizations, the dollar figure, whether it's a profit number, a revenue number, whatever, is the primary goal. And that is fine. What we need to then say is, how do we shape our workforce? How do we shape our cultures? How do we sustain and fuel our cultures so that people are mobilized, supported, empowered, and inspired to deliver that? And that is so much more than just a bonus.
Stacey, do different cultures then react to incentives in different ways then?
Well, there'll certainly be different types of industries and jobs where incentives are more the norm. And for a business to compete in them and attract the best talent, they'll have to have something available to attract and retain those workers. Absolutely. But as Mark was saying, it's important to step back and look at it more holistically, because there's lots of other things organizations could also do to motivate workers and to support them in addition to or beyond a compensation scheme.
Mark, how would you build on this from the employer's perspective?
Yeah, look, we talk to employees in Australia day in, day out, probably 10,000 over the last 8 years. And I can tell you there are five things that matter most. They haven't changed much, and yet, but the angle of why they matter and how they matter has changed. Here's the five. Number one, purpose and making a difference. So, of course, organizations that are doing good and the perceived as doing good, that's important. But it's not just about a meaningful purpose. It's the impact I can have, the agency I have to make a difference. And that doesn't always need a noble purpose. It is about sensing that I'm of consequence. The second one is the people around you. If the purpose motivates the people around you, sustain you and support you and keep you going, especially in challenging times and challenging sectors. The third is growth, learning and seeing a future. It is, of course, promotion and progression, and that has financial benefit often as well. But it's the sense that I'm moving and I'm expanding my horizons and I'm growing as a person, as a professional. The fourth, which I absolutely love, is autonomy, trust, and being heard. And you know, you think about that when you talk about a financial incentive, it isn't just about the money hitting your account. It is the sense that I am cared about, I'm listened to, I have a role to play. And the last one, which I think from everything you were saying, Stacey, makes so much sense, is meaningful recognition. Now, what's interesting is that in HR, we talk a lot about recognition and reward and we put them together. That's actually quite problematic, because when we put them together, the idea is, well, you recognize people by rewarding them with money. Actually, what drives much, much more connection and much more pride and sustained performance and retention is managers and others getting really good in the moments that matter and in the gaps in between, at recognizing and ensuring someone feels not just valued, but valuable in the work they're doing every day. And that actually has very little to do with an annual target waiting for you on the 30th of June if you don't quit.
So, Mark, are you thinking cash bonuses could be replaced by something better, something more in line with those five things?
Rather than replaced, I'd love to see aligned with or combined with. I think there are some sectors, you know, if you're trying to attract, retain, inspire salespeople in a very sales-driven environment, you know, you're going to struggle if you're not putting monetary incentives in there. And I think there's a huge place for people to benefit financially from the work they're doing and from achieving things. What I'm saying is, if that is all you're doing, in the classic scenario, I hear a lot of people say, I hate my job, I hate my boss, but the money's great. That is golden handcuffs. That is, the employee often starts by saying, great, I'm milking it, I'm cashing it in, I hate where I work, I'll get out as soon as I can, but right now this is gold. it doesn't take long before that employee, that human's confidence, their morale, their sense of self begins to erode away. And that is a real crisis for humans, not just for employers.
Stacey.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we call continuance commitment in the literature, Mark. And it's one of the poorer forms of commitment because people are just sticking out around because they fear the financial loss of moving somewhere else. What we'd love to foster in our employees is more an effective commitment, which is a liking of their organization. And that stems from how they're treated and valued and being feeling valuable, as you were saying. I'd also say in relation to the cash bonuses and whether we should keep them or not, it's a lot about not just what it's paired with, but how the system itself is designed. And so we know from the literature that people can perceive those schemes very differently. And they actually work quite well when people can see it as more of a positive challenge, or they can see getting the cash bonus as informative and developmental, because it provides a kind of useful piece of feedback in and of itself for their performance and for their growth.
And Stacey, do workplaces that offer incentives like performance-based pay attract certain kinds of people?
Yeah, there's some research on that. It's called the sorting effect. People with certain traits do prefer performance-based pay, and people with certain traits don't like performance-based pay. Risk aversion, people with high risk aversion really don't like performance-based pay systems, for example. They would prefer a fixed salary or something more stable along those lines.
And you're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National with Lisa Leong. We're talking to Dr. Stacey Parker from the University of Queensland and CEO of Employer Branding Australia, Mark Puncher, about incentives like cash. Does cash work? Now, coming up, how do we get people motivated and how do we stay motivated ourselves? We'll start with you, Stacey, about the idea of the thing behind the thing. So, yes, we have incentives, but we are talking here about motivation. So how do we know or what do we know about motivation for individuals?
Well, the motivation theory that I ascribe to is called the self-determination theory, and we think of motivation as having different forms or types. And so people can be amotivated, they're just going through the motions, they don't really have a reason why they're doing their work, or they can be more extrinsically motivated for the cash bonus or for esteem or recognition, or they can be what's more called introjected, which is you just feel an inner sense of pressure and should. And those motivations we call the have-to motivations. You're doing it because of a sense of pressure or you feel like you have to. And then moving along, it becomes more internalized and more the high-quality motivation we'd want to see in our employees. And so we have identified motivation, which is where you identify with the goal or the mission. You think it's important what you're doing. And then intrinsic motivation, where it's just interesting or fun or enjoyable to do inherently. And those identified and intrinsic motives are what we would call more autonomous or internalized or I want to motivation. And that's the type of motivation that, you know, decades of research, meta-analysis after a meta-analysis finds it's not only great for performance and also complex forms of performance, proactive performance, creativity, innovation, helping others, pro-social behavior at work, citizenship, but also well-being, so people can perform really well and feel well. It's like that's the golden piece of the puzzle.
So then aren't incentives and looking at extrinsic motivation, isn't that just smoke and mirrors then?
They can occur together. You don't have to be entirely motivated one way. Okay. And so you can have profiles of motivation where you're a bit more highly motivated in a number of different ways. But what's important is making sure that you cultivate that I want to motivation. And if you do, exist in an industry where it is important competitively to have cash bonuses and it's part of the norm of attracting and retaining key talent, you need to make sure you protect that. You know, I want to motivation and put good structures in place for that. I have to motivation and those perks. Yeah. So you don't accidentally undermine that beautiful intrinsic motivation.
Mark,
You know what I think is so interesting about this? What we often do, we do a lot of work in employer brand and EVP, employee value proposition. And what we often do is we separate things in silos. Is it purpose? Is it money? Is it growth? It's absolutely a psychological contract. It's a combination. It's a package of things. So what I love is, you know, if you've got, you might have a job, you know, that isn't easy. And certainly there's moments where it's really great. There's moments where it's harder. It's great to be able to fall back on that saying, well, at least the money's good, or at least there's benefits ahead. We need that. But what we've seen in EVP, there's too many organizations that are essentially reducing this to transactional. They're saying, if you come in and you've got to do this work, in return, we'll pay you and you'll get bonuses. Great EVPs, the next level of EVP will talk about, we'll look after you, there's support. It's a nice culture, there's good things, and we'll train you. Wonderful. The really great EVPs, especially in challenging times, speak to and celebrate the journey, the build, the work to do. Great talent doesn't want to come and just sit and take. They actually want to come in and make a difference and solve problems and take things on and test themselves and prove themselves. The issue is when we're all doing battle with life, trying to get our kids to school and trying to pay for groceries and cover our bills, those things can be forgotten. So there's a real onus on employers today to be intentional and strategic about how they will achieve those goals, climb that mountain with and through their people, alongside them, not as an us and them, as us together, as our team.
And Mark, the term employee value proposition does have an eye roll factor just because it's getting a little bit tired nowadays. But what's the latest in terms of the EVPs, as you're putting it, and what in this really quite tough climate people are seeing as being really the real deal?
Absolutely. EVP is absolutely essential. It always has been, but it's been bastardized. And it's become a campaign. It's become a nice, a promise that you don't live up to. The whole point, and EVP is intensely personal. It is your EVP in my own little business, each person has a different EVP. Or we have different EVP for each person. So what matters is really understanding what are we trying to achieve? Who are the humans and what are the skills and the mindsets and behaviors that we need in order to achieve them? And then who are those people? Who are those audiences? And why should they choose us? Again, the critical piece is not why should you choose us and take. It's, we'll give you money. Yes, we'll give you financial benefits. We'll give you incentives potentially. What it's saying is, why is this worth it? There's three statements that I'm gunning for all of our clients and for my own team. I want every employee in Australia to sit in their job, in their organization, and say, number one, I am glad I'm here. I'm grateful that this is where I choose to work. Number two, this journey is worth it. And number three, I can affect the destination and the path. Now, that's a pipe dream. Not everyone's going to feel that way, and not every employee is going to deliver on that. But if you and your own organization and your own team can get people feeling those things and actively advocating internally and externally, then the results will follow.
And Stacey, how do we design spaces where people feel rewarded?
Oh, well, there's lots of different ways to reward and recognise people, isn't there? A cash bonus is one. And as we've talked about, when people view that positively, that can be really great, extra perk on top of everything else. But, of course, also it comes down to leadership, teams, culture, work design, so many other things. So many other levers for organisations to use to support employees that way.
Mark, tell us about your thoughts on designing our workplaces so that we can incentivise and motivate our employees.
You know what? I'm going to bring it back, and you're going to love this, Stacey, to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I bang on about
no.
all the time. Go on. Do you want to jump in?
No.
I think there's so much centered in a model like that. You've got to be very careful with how it's treated. But one of the things we talk about, we've got to stop talking about a workplace, money and the office space. We've got a lot of employers trying to lure employees back to an office space. We've now got them forcing them back to an office space. We've got some, dare I say it, using the return to the office space as a way to encourage people to quit. We're falling well away from where we need to be. You don't start by saying, how do we get them to work in an office space, or how do we get them to work harder, or what does the workspace need to look like? What we need to say is, what are we trying to achieve as an organization, as a collective? How is that work best done? In my own team, there's a lot of our team that love being together, and so we create opportunities and space for them to be together. There's others, there's one person, I can think of straight away, one of our highest performers, who's far more productive, who's far more comfortable working from home. So she actually comes in less. So it is personalization. But it is creating, and it's creating real trust and comfort for people. You know, and again, we've got to be careful here. The social narrative becomes this bad employers forcing employees to do things. And we've got to remember the whole contract here is we need to achieve. We need to succeed. Everybody needs to lean in and deliver. And that needs to contribute to success collectively. So I think, you know, on both employees and employees coming together and saying, well, here's one for you, sitting down around a table or on some screens and saying, let's design the culture that we want and that we need in order to achieve our goals, not what do we want management to do.
Stacey.
Yes, I definitely agree that it's great to get employees involved, participating, giving them opportunity to have voice. But I also think sometimes we've got to be careful about not putting too much extra onus on them to fix problems that senior leaders should be, when they're getting paid the big bucks, you know, to sort all that stuff out. And so I think it's great to seek and involve employees in those discussions. I think that also if an employer is going to do that, then they need to be really careful to make sure that they then show how that input's being used down the track, that it's not just having a blue sky session and then nothing kind of comes from it, that there's actually some good use and translation of what was discovered through that information collection process.
It's the opposite of the annual all-staff survey, isn't it? We're seeing this all the time. You know, I'll give you an example. We're seeing a lot right now that there is a real need to reconnect with your purpose, your vision, your values, your goals and your strategy. Now, those are all platitudes. They're all, you know, we've all got purpose statements on our websites and the walls. I can tell you, and I've seen this consistently, if you want better commercial results, if you want better performance, if you want more people contributing positively to your culture, connecting with those things really matters. I agree with you, Stacey. We've got to stop putting everything on employees. But at the same time, if you do your company values on the executive retreat, in between the bungee jump and the financial reporting, and you send them in an all-staff email saying, hey, everyone, here's the values you now need to live, you are done. You know, and you may as well have not done it in the first place. So What we're doing a lot, we're listening to people, we're giving people the mic and the chance to share. We're telling them in advance what we want from them. And critically, we're really clear where the executive are saying, no, this is fixed. You know, I think the executive can frame the core values that matter most and that they feel are going to be most important moving forward. You've then got to sit with those employees and help them think about and listen to them as they think about and talk about, how do those play out in my team, in my work? How, there's two things. Why should I? Why is this journey worth it? Why should I be on this journey with this organization? Why should I stay? Why should I deliver? Why should I perform? And secondly, what do you need from me? How can I contribute as a professional with my skills and knowledge and as a human with my behaviors and my personality?
Thank you so much, Mark. And thank you, Stacey.
Thanks, Lisa.
Great to meet you.
Dr. Stacey Parker is an associate professor and endorsed organizational psychologist at UQ's School of Psychology. Mark Puncher is the CEO of Employer Branding Australia. Thank you both. Thanks for listening to This Working Life. It was produced by Rob Kelly and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Our actors today were me, Lisa Leong, and producer Rob Kelly. No bonuses for us. If you'd like to hear more from us, though, you can like it or subscribe to our show on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. And please rate and review us while you're there. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next time, work it, baby. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.